You're with Annie on Solidarity Breakfast, and another sizzling Kevin Healy analysis of the week. And in the studio, I have more live guests. How extraordinary. It's turning into a nightmare, this morning program. G'day, Kelly. How are you?
I'm very well, Annie.
Yes, so we've got Kelly Whitworth, and you are a Melbourne Social Equity Institute Community Fellow.
Yes.
And your other community fellow from the same place, Michael Collins. Hello, how are you?
Good morning, Annie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, yeah. And you've both put together, collaborated, put together Housing Activism and Local Government, the Bendigo Street Occupation, a case study. And having been part of activist events, often a large event happens, and this was over 8 months occupying the Bendigo Street houses that were left over from the houses that had been compulsorily acquired but not pulled down after the East-West Link was thrown out. The point of the question is, often people don't actually go through the coals, and you don't actually look through it and try and analyse it. Tell us about your journey towards this report.
I reckon Mike's best place to answer that, because it really was his idea, thankfully.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of story to tell about what happened at Bendigo Street, but I work in local government, and I've been very interested in the potential kind of power of local government in terms of making change in relation to housing. And I saw what happened in Bendigo Street as something that I think needed to be both well documented and understood. So maybe there are things that happened there, if we have a good understanding of what happened, even just in that framing, just the relationship between local government and the activists, that can inform, better things in the future, and inform. And I especially wanted to, speak to local government and make out of it, maybe make some tentative proposals about ways to do things better. That kind of, when there's mutual agreement on between activists and local government on the goals you want to achieve, what local government can actively do to support the people on the ground who are putting their kind of lives on the line, as people did.
Because that was the point, wasn't it? Because the Yarra Council had actually been working on they were trying to get those houses designated as social housing, and for some unknown reason that didn't fall into the agenda of the Victorian government.
Yes, there had been a announcement by the state government about 6 months before the occupation started that there was they were going to,
but that's a lie,
put them in. The fact of it is that it never actually happened, and I guess we fast forward past the occupation, those houses in Bendigo Street were sold on the open market.
That's right. I mean, very insidious. In fact, there was a point where actual research has shown that there were about three houses, and they did a whole range of things that were to malign the people who were holding the houses, the activists. That was your experience, in order to change the narrative.
From the get-go, Annie. Initially, they ignored us, and because we were revealing some pretty toxic stuff, you know, that the charity that had been given a portion of the houses to house homeless people, when we rocked up there, we found they were housing their own employees. You know, the media and the government wouldn't touch that, you know, with a 10-foot pole. Then they said that we were preventing, this is at the time when the Royal Commission into Domestic Violence,
yes,
Family Violence was released, and that we were now preventing women and children from accessing those houses who would never end up being housed there. That was a lie. And then later on, you know, we were taking drugs in the street. We were wielding machetes in the street, all kinds of just crazy stuff, that we were just no good rat bag people. But that's all. They knew that we were on strong ground. They had a whole media department create documents on how their employees should best answer questions from the media on how to respond to what we were doing, because we were really strong and we had them by their short and curlies, you know. So they did everything they could to just discredit us, yeah.
And it was very difficult, wasn't it, because it's very hard to keep feeding the media, strategizing. And there were a whole range of things about the activist group, which was that you took the position that you weren't going to be a hierarchical, and this caused some people considered that to be a weakness, but this is actually the divide between the future and past paradigms of power distribution, isn't it? I mean, that's what you guys were about.
Well, we had the Homeless Persons Union. I was a part of that. We were a small crew, a few people. And then we had, you know, lots of other different people that were coming that were not affiliated with any other group, and just individuals.
They were homeless.
People that were homeless. That's right. That were rocking up. Teenagers, stolen generation people, people that had just come straight off the street, escaping family violence. And we couldn't tell them, and we didn't want to tell them what they should be doing. If they wanted to occupy their other houses, then who are we to stop them? And but I think broadly everybody was on board with our one of our demands, that we wanted them to be turned into genuine public housing, and everybody was down with that.
You had about six demands, didn't you?
Yeah, one was to turn them all into public housing. One was for the minister at the time, Martin Foley, to come down and actually speak to people that were homeless and listen to their stories. One was like transparency on all the East-West Link properties, because when we arrived there, Annie, we didn't know who was managing the properties. Had they been sold yet? Were they being managed by a private real estate? Which ones were being managed by the charity? Like, that was all unclear. So that was one of our demands as well. And another one was, what are you going to do with the, you know, 56,000 people that are on the public housing waiting list? What are your plans to address their housing future?
It's interesting because there was a framing of you as naughty children. The idea that the state government did never come down and speak to you and never thought that it was appropriate was because reading through the lines, I'd say that they saw that as being giving you credence if they came and spoke to you as real people.
And it, even when you talked about the self-organising, no leaders approach that was taken to the occupation, that lack of legitimacy that was offered to the occupiers happened, as we say in our research, at local government level as well. So there was meetings happening that including the police, including community organizations, council officers, about the occupation and about what to do, but nobody from the Homeless Persons Union or anybody else was invited in. And as we were told in our research, it was because there was discomfort about those people kind of being in a part of discussing what was going on. And I think that's really important that we...
Actually, last night I went to a film called Law of the Land, and it was about this. In fact, it was about First Nations people up in Arnhem Land wanting treaty, and it's a very important film. They actually elected one of their own to go to Parliament in the Northern Territory. And when he got there, the other parliamentarians decided that they'd have a forum about treaty, and he was excluded. It's so reminiscent of what you're talking about.
Definitely.
Takes your breath away, hey?
Definitely. And as our research revealed, the lack of a perceived clear, as you were saying, hierarchy, or who's always the question is, you know, when police rock up to these events, who's your leader? like, well, we're all leaders here, you know. Yeah, that's a real problem for council, like how to engage with activists that don't have, that are not like a charity, that are not like an incorporated association. Like, how do we engage?
Haven't put their suit on.
Yeah, how do we engage with these people? They've got a lot of work to do in to skill themselves in listening to the community.
Yeah, yeah. There was a whole range of things that came out of it. Ultimately, you could say that, you benchmarks of success. You actually go through a whole range of different ways that one would benchmark success. So, for example, Kelly, you were saying, the activists said that there's self-empowerment that was involved in this. That's a mark of success, right?
Definitely. And I think it really changed the perception of the homeless voice in the city. For the first time, people that were homeless had a really strong political voice. And I think that just changed for a lot of people. Because I think before that, people that were homeless were seen as very passive, stupid. They didn't actually have anything intelligent to say. And these were a bunch of people that really understood their situation and understood the system and could articulate it and speak to it really clearly. And another great outcome, Annie, was that like a whole bunch of people that were occupying that were really vulnerable, they ended up getting public housing out of this occupation, which is tremendous. They're still living in their homes today and they're living lives, you know.
And as the report says, they're still alive.
They're still alive, you know, and that's just wonderful. Unfortunately, some of the people who were on the street who weren't able to get housing have since passed, you know, a couple of women from the Indigenous community. So that's just an absolute travesty. So things could have been really different and council really could have stood up and supported the occupation much better.
There was something else that's really important that was a changing, if a legal definition that changed, like when you were not just fronting to the, as the report says, you weren't just fronting to the media, you're actually fronting to the law. And people did pro bono work. Lots of good people put in their work to, because they could see that they needed to be able to move the systems in a more positive way. There were some judgments that came out of this, wasn't it? Wasn't there?
Yeah, and I think, as I understand it, and I'm reading the transcripts from the legal cases, the judiciary gave a very sympathetic hearing to the voices of the occupiers who had a chance to tell their story and were actually often quite dismissive of the position of the state government and saying, well, that we just need these eviction orders put through. And
Just do your job.
And there was orders that said that human rights assessments had to take place so that people weren't being moved into homelessness out of the situation of the occupation. And I think that was
that becomes a legal definition. That's important.
I think it's important. I think we're still a long way, Annie, having a human right to housing. but it was a significant moment that those judgments were made.
Mm. Yeah, that the government operators can't just shirk their responsibility. You know, how dare you, you dirty people, go away.
They have to conduct a human rights assessment before they can just chuck anybody out of public housing.
Mm. And they realise that they have blood in their hands when people pass away, as you say. You've got an event so people can, you're launching this. This is an important thing for people to take on board, this activism, because what this report is really about is how can local government be more responsive and useful to activists, and how can activists learn a bit about the way the structures of local governments work so that they can be more effectively wielded.
I think you've summed it up very well.
You encapsulated it well.
Yeah, so on a Tuesday at 6 o'clock at University of Melbourne and the Melbourne School of Design, We are having a launch. We've got a panel of great people who were involved in different ways at the time. Anne Barton from who was at Yarra Council at the time, Pat Cipollone, who was involved in the HPUV, and Meg Fitzgerald from the Fitzroy Legal Service are going to be talking with us.
Great heroes.
You can kind of watch it online as well. So if you look up the Social Equity Institute's website, there's information there about the event. That's at Tuesday at 6:00.